Chapter 5 Ben watched Jessica walk like a baby giraffe towards the Peugeot 308, overpriced piece of crap, parked at the gate, engine running. One of the Peugeot's brake lights was gone, and the muffler looked like it was bent, no doubt from that dirt road. The lady behind the wheel was leaning halfway out her window, practically falling out, waving wildly at Jessica, as if she couldn't be more pleased to see her. Why didn't she just open her car door and get out? It looked like the health resort was closed. A burst water main? A mutiny? He could only hope. Jessica could hardly walk in those stupid shoes. It was like she was on stilts. The heels were as skinny as toothpicks. She would roll an ankle any minute. Ben squatted down next to his car and ran his fingers over the paintwork, searching for stone chips. He glanced back at the road they'd just come down and winced. How could a place that charged eye-watering rates have a road like that? There should have been a warning on the website. He'd thought for sure they were going to bottom out on some of those potholes. No scratches that he could see, which was a miracle, but who knew what damage there was to the undercarriage? He'd have to wait till he could get it back up in the workshop, take a look. He wanted to do it right now, but he was going to have to wait 10 days. Maybe he should get the car towed back to Melbourne. He could call Pete's guys. It wasn't the craziest of ideas, except that he'd never hear the end of it if any of his former workmates saw that he'd driven this car down that road. He suspected his ex-boss would cry, literally cry, if he saw what Ben had done. Pete's eyes had got suspiciously shiny after the scratch incident last month. Scratchgate, they all called it. Jealous fuck, Pete said when Ben showed him the long, deliberate scratch left by some evil person's key on the passenger door. Ben couldn't work out where and when it had happened. He never left the car in public car parks. It felt like it had to be someone they knew. Ben could name multiple people who might resent him and Jessica enough to have done it. Once, he would have found it hard to name a single enemy in his life. Now, it seemed they had a nice little collection. He knew Jessica thought it was Ben's sister who had done it, although she never accused Lucy out loud. He could read her mind by the thin fold of her lips. Maybe she was right. It could have been Lucy. Pete had fixed the scratch with the same care as if he were restoring a priceless painting, and Ben had been vigilant until right now when he'd put the car at huge, unforgivable risk by driving down that hellish road. Ben should never have given in to Jessica. He'd tried. He stopped the car and told her, calmly and without swearing, that driving a car like this down an unsealed road was negligent and that the consequences could be catastrophic. They could, for example, rip out the exhaust system. It was almost like she seriously didn't care about the exhaust system. They'd yelled at each other for 10 minutes straight. Proper yelling. Spitballs flying. Their faces red and ugly and contorted. The head-exploding frustration he'd felt during that argument was like something half-remembered from childhood, when you couldn't express yourself properly and you had no control over your life because you were a kid. So when your mum or dad said you couldn't have the new Star Wars action figure you wanted with all your heart, you totally lost your shit. There had been a moment there when he'd clenched his fists, when he had to tell himself, "Don't hit her." He hadn't known he was capable of feeling the desire to hit a woman. He folded right then. He said, "Fine, I'll ruin the car. Whatever." Most guys he knew wouldn't have even stopped for the yelling. They would have just done a U-turn. Most guys would never have agreed to this crazy idea in the first place. A health resort. Yoga and hot springs. He didn't get it. But Jessica had said they needed to do something dramatic, and this would fix things. She said they needed to detox their minds and their bodies to save their marriage. They were going to eat organic lettuce and get couples counseling. It was going to be 10 days of pure torture. Some celebrity couple had come to this place and saved their marriage. They had achieved inner peace and got back in touch with their true selves. What a load of crap. They may as well have handed over their money to Nigerian email scammers. Ben had a horrible feeling the celebrity couple might have got together on The Bachelorette. Jessica loved celebrities. He used to think it was sweet, a dumb interest for a smart girl. But now she was making too many life decisions based on what celebrities did or what it was reported they did. It was probably all crap anyway. They were probably getting paid to support products on their Instagram accounts. And there was Jessica, his poor, innocent, hopeful Jessica, soaking it all up. Now it was like she thought she was one of those people. She was imagining herself at those trashy red carpet events. Every time she got her photo taken these days, she put her hand on her hip, like she was doing the actions for "I'm a Little Teapot," then turned side on and thrust out her jaw with this maniacal smile. It was the weirdest thing. And the time she took setting up these photographs. The other day, she had spent 42 minutes, he'd timed it, taking a photo of her feet. One of their biggest fights recently had been about one of her Instagram posts. It was a photo of her in a bikini top, leaning over, pushing her arms together so her new boobs looked even bigger, and pouting her puffy new lips at the camera. She asked what he thought of the photo, her face all hopeful, and because of her hopeful face, he hadn't said what he really thought, that it looked like she was advertising a cheap escort service. He just shrugged and said, "It's okay." Her hopeful face fell. You'd think he'd called her a name. Next thing he knew, she was screaming at him. These days, she could go from 0 to 100 in a second. And he felt sucker punched, unable to understand what had just happened. So he'd walked away while she was in the middle of yelling and went upstairs to play the Xbox. He thought walking away was a good thing to do, a mature, manly thing to do, to disengage and give her time to calm down. He kept getting these things wrong. She ran up the stairs after him and grabbed the back of his t-shirt before he reached the top. "Look at me," she screamed. "You don't even look at me anymore." And it killed him to hear her say that, because it was true. He avoided looking at her. He was trying really hard to get over that. There were men who stayed married to women who were disfigured by accidents, burns or scars or whatever. It shouldn't make a difference that Jessica was disfigured by her own hand. Not literally her own hand. Her own credit card. Willful disfigurement. and then all her stupid friends encouraged her. Oh, my God, Jessica, you look incredible. He wanted to yell at them. Are you blind? She looks like a chipmunk. The thought of separating from Jessica was like having his guts ripped out. But these days, being married to Jessica was like having his guts ripped out. Whatever way you looked at it, guts ripped out. If this retreat worked, if they got back to the way they used to be, it was even worth the damage to the car. Obviously, it was worth it. Jessica was meant to be the mother of his children, his future children. He thought of the day of the robbery, 2 years ago now. He remembered the way her face, it was still her own beautiful face back then, had crumpled like a little kid's. And the rage he'd felt. He'd wanted to find those fuckwits and smash their faces. If not for the robbery, if not for the fuckwits, they wouldn't be at this place. He wouldn't have the car, but at least he wouldn't be stuck here for the next 10 days. On balance, he still wanted to smash their faces. Ben? Jessica beckoned him over. She was all social and smiley, like they hadn't just been yelling at each other. She was so good at that. They could drive to a party and fight all the way, not say a word to each other as they walked up someone's stairs, and then the door of the apartment opens and bang, different person. Laughing, joking, teasing him, touching him, taking selfies, like they were so having sex tonight, when they were so not having sex tonight. Then, back in the car on the way home, she'd restart the fight. It was like flicking a switch on and off. It freaked him out. "It's just good manners," she told him. "You don't take your fight to a party. It's no one else's business." He straightened up, adjusted his cap, and went over to stand beside Jessica to perform like her monkey. "This is my husband, Ben," said Jessica. "Ben, this is Frances. She's doing the same retreat as us. Oh, well, probably not exactly the same." The lady smiled up at him from the driver's seat. "That's a very fancy car, Ben," she said. She spoke as if she already knew him. Her voice was snuffly and hoarse, the tip of her nose bright red. "It's like something from a movie." He could see straight down the huge chasm of her cleavage. He couldn't help it. There was literally nowhere else to look. It wasn't bad, but she was old, so it wasn't good either. She wore red lipstick and had a lot of curly, gold-coloured hair pulled back in a ponytail. She reminded him of one of his mum's tennis friends. He liked his mum's tennis friends. They were uncomplicated and didn't expect him to say much. But he preferred them not to have cleavage. "Thanks," he said, trying to focus on her very shiny, friendly eyes. "Nice to meet you." "What sort of car is it?" asked Frances. "It's a Lamborghini." "Ooh la la, a Lamborghini." She grinned up at him. "This here is a Peugeot." Yeah, I know," he said. Pained. "Don't think much of the Peugeot." She tilted her head to one side. "It's a heap of shit," said Ben. "Ben," said Jessica. But Frances laughed delightedly. "I love my little Peugeot," purred Frances as she caressed her steering wheel. Well, said Ben, each to their own. Francis says nobody is answering the intercom, said Jessica. She's been sitting out here waiting for 20 minutes. Jessica was using her posh new voice, where she made each word sound as fat and round as an apple. She was using it almost exclusively now, except when she really lost her temper or got upset. Like last night, when she forgot to be posh and yelled at him, "Why can't you just be happy? Why are you ruining this?" "Have you phoned them?" he said now to the cleavage lady. "Maybe there's something wrong with the intercom." "I've left a message," said Francis. "I wonder if this is like a test," said Jessica. "Maybe it's part of our treatment plan." She lifted her hair up to cool her neck. Sometimes when she spoke normally, when she was just being herself, he could forget the frozen forehead, the blowfish lips, the puffy cheeks, the camel eyelashes, eyelash extensions, the fake hair, hair extensions, and fake boobs. And there, for just a moment, was his sweet Jessica, the Jessica he'd known since high school. "I thought that too," said Francis. Ben turned to look at the intercom. "I could hardly read the instructions," said Francis. "They were so tiny." Ben could read them perfectly well. He punched in the code and pressed the green button. "I will be absolutely furious if it works for you," said Francis. A tinny voice sprang from the intercom. "Namaste. And welcome to Tranquillum House. How may I help you?" "What the hell?" Francis mouthed in comical disbelief. Ben shrugged. "Just needed a man's touch." "Oh, you," she said. She reached out of the car and flicked his arm with her hand. Jessica bent down next to the intercom and spoke too loudly. "We're here to check in." It was cute, like Ben's grandma on the phone. "The name is Chandler, Jessica and Ben." There was a burst of static from the intercom and the gates began to creak open. Jessica straightened, tucked her hair behind her ear, worried, as always, about her dignity. She never used to take herself so seriously. "I promise you I pressed that code correctly, or I thought I did," said Frances, as she buckled her seatbelt and revved her tappity little engine. She gave them a little wave. "I'll see you in there. Don't try to race me with your fancy schmancy Ferrari." "It's a Lamborghini," protested Ben. Frances winked at him, as if she knew that perfectly well, and drove off, faster than he would have expected or recommended on this road. As they walked back towards the car, Jessica said, "We're not telling anybody, right? That's the deal. If anyone asks, just say the car isn't even yours. Say it belongs to a friend." "Yeah, but I'm not as good a liar as you," he said. He meant it as a joke, or even a compliment, but he was leaving the interpretation up to her. "Fuck you," she said, though without much heat. So maybe they were okay. But sometimes the embers of a dying argument sparked without warning. You never knew. He would stay alert. "She seemed nice," said Ben. "The lady, Francis. That was safe. Francis was old. There could be no possibility of jealousy. The jealousy was a fun new development in their relationship. The more Jessica changed her face and body, the less secure she got. I think I recognized her, said Jessica. Really? I'm pretty sure she's Frances Welty, the writer. I used to be crazy about her books. What sort of books does she write? Asked Ben. He opened his car door. She said something he didn't catch. Sorry? What? Romance! Jessica slammed the passenger door so hard, he winced. Chapter 6. Francis. That's more like it, thought Francis when she got her first look at the Victorian mansion emerging majestically in the distance. The road was sealed now, thankfully, and the bushland became progressively greener and softer. Tranquillum House was sandstone, three stories, with a red corrugated iron roof and a princess tower. Francis had the delightful sensation of time travelling to the late 19th century, although the sensation was somewhat spoiled by the yellow Lamborghini purring along behind her. How could those kids afford that car? Drug dealers? Trust fund kids? Drug dealing seemed more likely than trust fund. Neither of them had that creamy, entitled look of old money. She glanced in the rearview mirror again. From here, with her hair blowing in the wind, Jessica looked like the pretty girl she was meant to be. You couldn't see all the procedures she'd had done to her young face. The thick layer of makeup was bad enough, but oh, goodness me, the blinding white teeth, the enormous puffy lips, and the work. It was such bad work. Frances was not opposed to cosmetic procedures. In fact, she was very fond of them. But there was something so sad and garish about this sweet child's plumped-up, smoothed-out face. Surely all that jewellery she was wearing couldn't be real, could it? Those massive sapphires in her ears would be worth... what? Frances had no idea. A lot. The car was obviously real, though. So maybe the jewellery was real too. Up-and-coming mobsters? YouTube stars? The boy, Jessica's husband, they seemed too young for such grown-up terms, was cute as a button. Francis would try not to flirt with him. The joke might wear thin after 10 days, possibly even bordering on... sleazy? Possibly bordering on pedophilia, darling, Alain would say. It was awful to think of lovely Ben shuddering over Francis, the way Francis had once shuddered over the behaviour of older male authors at publishing parties. They used to be particularly hideous if they'd recently won a literary prize. Their dialogue was so powerful and impenetrable, it didn't require punctuation. So, naturally, they didn't require permission to slip-slide their hairy hands over the body of a young writer of genre fiction. In their minds, Frances virtually owed them sex in return for her unseemly mass-market sales of airport trash. Stop it. Don't think about the review, Francis. She'd marched in the Women's March. She was not a blight on feminism just because she described the colour of her hero's eyes. How could you fall in love with someone if you didn't know the colour of his eyes? And she was obliged to tie up everything at the end with a giant bow. Those were the rules. If Frances left her endings ambiguous, her readers would come after her with pitchforks. Do not think about the review. Do not think about the review. She dragged her mind back to Ben and Jessica. So, yes, she would remember to be age appropriate with Ben. She would pretend they were related. She'd behave like his aunt. She certainly wouldn't touch him. My God, she hadn't touched him already, had she? The review was making her doubt everything about herself. Her hands tightened around the steering wheel. She had a habit of touching people on the arm to make a point, or when they said something that made her laugh, or when she felt in any way fondly towards them. At least talking with Ben and Jessica had calmed her down. She'd scared herself for a moment there. Loss of self indeed. What a drama queen. The road circled up towards the house. Ben politely kept his powerful car at a respectable distance behind Frances, even though he probably longed to floor it on the curves. She drove up a stately driveway lined with towering pine trees. Not too shabby, she murmured. She'd prepared herself for a seedier reality than the website pictures, but up close, Tranquillum House was beautiful. The lacy white balconies glowed in the sunlight. The garden was lush and green in the summer heat, with a sign helpfully proclaiming, "This property uses rainwater," so no one could criticize the lushness. Two white uniformed staff members, with the floaty, straight-backed postures of the spiritually advanced, emerged unhurriedly from the house onto the wide veranda to greet them. Perhaps they'd been off meditating while she was stuck outside the gate trying to ring them. Frances had barely come to a complete stop when her car door was opened by the man. He was young, of course, like everyone. Asian, with a hipster beard and a man bun. Bright-eyed and smooth-skinned. A delightful man-kid. Namaste. The man-kid pressed his palms together and bowed. A very warm welcome to Tranquillum House. He spoke with a tiny, measured pause between each word. I'm Yao, he said, your personal wellness consultant. Hello, Yao. I'm Frances Welty, your new victim. She undid her seatbelt and smiled up at him. She told herself she would not laugh or attempt to imitate his yogic voice or let it drive her mad. We'll take care of everything from here, said Yao. How many bags do you have?
Just the one, said Frances. She indicated the back seat. I can carry it. It's quite light.
She didn't want to let the bag out of her sight because she'd packed a few banned items, like coffee, tea, chocolate, dark chocolate, antioxidants, and just one bottle of a good red. Also antioxidants. Leave your bag right there, Frances, and your keys in the ignition, said Yao firmly.
Damn it. Oh well. Her slight embarrassment over her contraband, even though there was no way he could tell just by looking at the bag, she was normally such a good girl when it came to rules, caused her to hop out of the car awkwardly and too fast, forgetting her new fragility. Oh, she said. She straightened slowly and met Yao's eyes. Back pain. I'm sorry to hear that, said Yao. I'm going to arrange an urgent massage at the spa for you. He took a small notepad and pencil out of his pocket and made a note. I also have a paper cut, said Frances solemnly. She held up her thumb. Yao took hold of her thumb and peered at it. Nasty, he said. We'll need to get some aloe vera on that.
Oh, God, he was gorgeous with his little notebook, taking her paper cut so seriously. She caught herself studying his shoulders and looked away fast. For God's sake, Frances. Nobody had warned her that this would happen during middle age, these sudden, wildly inappropriate waves of desire for young men with no biological imperative whatsoever. Maybe this was what men felt like all their lives. No wonder the poor things had to pay out all that money in lawsuits. And you're here for the 10-day cleanse, said Yao.
That's right, said Frances.
Awesome, said Yao, causing Frances to fortunately lose all desire in an instant. She could never sleep with someone who said awesome.
So, may I go inside? Asked Frances snappily. Now she felt quite ill at the thought of sex with the man kid, or sex with anyone for that matter. She was far too hot.
She saw that Yao was distracted by the sight of Ben and Jessica's car, or possibly by Jessica, who was standing with one hip cocked, slowly curling a long strand of hair around her finger, while Ben talked to another white-uniformed wellness consultant. A young woman with skin so beautiful, it looked like it was lit from within.
That's a Lamborghini, said Frances.
I know it is, said Yao, forgetting to put the tiny pauses between his words. He gestured towards the house, stepping aside to let Frances cross the threshold first. She walked into a large entrance hall and waited for her eyes to adjust to the dim light. The soft hush, unique to old houses, washed over her like cool water. There were beautiful details wherever she looked. Honey-coloured parquetry floors, antique chandeliers, ornately carved ceiling cornices, and lead-light windows.
This is so beautiful, she said. Oh, and look at that. It's like the staircase from the Titanic.
She walked over to touch the lustrous mahogany wood. Flecks of light streamed from a stained glass window on the landing. As you may know, Tranquillum House was built in 1840, and this is the original red cedar and rosewood staircase, said Yao. Other people have commented on the resemblance to the Titanic staircase. So far, we've had much better luck than the Titanic. We won't sink, Frances. He'd clearly made this joke many times before. Frances gave him a more generous laugh than it deserved. The house was built of locally quarried sandstone by a wealthy solicitor from England. Yao continued to recite facts like a nerdy museum guide. He wanted a house that would be the best in the colony.
Built with the help of convicts, I understand, said Frances, who had read the website.
That's right, said Yao. The solicitor was granted 500 acres of good farming land and assigned 10 convicts. He got lucky
because they included two former stonemason brothers from York.
We have a convict in our family tree, said Frances. She was transported from Dublin for stealing a silk gown.
We're tremendously proud of her.
Yao gestured away from the staircase to make it clear she wasn't to go up there just yet.
I know you'll want a rest after that long drive, but first I'd like to give you a quick tour of your new home for the next 10 days.
Unless I don't last the distance, said Frances. 10 days suddenly seemed like a very long time. I might go home early.
No one goes home early, said Yao serenely.
Well, yes, but they can, said Frances, if they choose.
No one goes home early, repeated Yao. It just doesn't happen. No one wants to go home at all. You're about to embark on a truly transformative experience, Frances.
He led her to a large room at the side of the house with bay windows overlooking the valley and one long monastery-like table.
This is the dining room, where you'll come for your meals. All the guests eat together, of course.
Of course, said Frances hoarsely. She cleared her throat. Great.
Breakfast is served at 7 a.m., lunch at noon, and dinner at 6 p.m.
Breakfast at 7 a.m.?
Frances blanched. She could manage the communal meals for lunch and dinner, but she couldn't eat and talk with strangers in the morning.
I'm a night owl, she told Yao. I'm normally comatose at 7 a.m.
Ah, but that's the old Frances. The new Frances will have already done a sunrise Tai Chi class and guided meditation by 7, said Yao.
I seriously doubt that, said Frances.
Yao smiled, as if he knew better. There will be a 5-minute warning bell before meals are served, or smoothies, during the fast periods. We do ask that you come promptly to the dining room as soon as you hear the warning bell.
Certainly, said Frances with a rising sense of horror. She'd quite forgotten about the fast periods. Is there room service?
I'm afraid not, although your morning and late evening smoothies will be brought to your room, said Yao.
But no club sandwiches at midnight, hey?
Yao shuddered. God, no.
He led her past the dining room to a cozy living room lined with bookshelves. A number of couches surrounded a marble fireplace.
The lavender room, said Yao. You're welcome to come here any time to relax, read, or enjoy an herbal tea.
He said herbal the American way. Herbal. Lovely, said Frances, mollified by the sight of the books. They walked by a closed door with the word private stenciled on it in gold letters, which Frances, being Frances, felt strongly compelled to open. She couldn't abide member-only lounges to which she didn't have membership.
This leads to our director's office at the top of the house.
Yao touched the door gently.
We do ask that you only open this door if you have an appointment.
By all means, said Frances resentfully. You will meet the director later today, said Yao, as if this were a special treat she'd been long anticipating. At your first guided meditation. Awesome, said Frances through her teeth. Now, you'll want to see the gym, said Yao. Oh, not especially, said Frances, but he was already leading her back across the reception area to the opposite side of the house. This was originally the drawing room, said Yao. It's been refurbished as a state-of-the-art gym. Well, that is a tragedy, Frances proclaimed when Yao opened a glass door to reveal a light-filled room crowded with what appeared to be elaborate torture devices. Yao's smile faltered. We kept all the original plasterwork. He pointed at the ceiling. Frances gave a disdainful sniff. Marvelous. You can lie back and admire the ceiling rose while you're being drawn and quartered. Yao looked at her face and hurriedly closed the gym door. Let me show you the yoga and meditation studio. He continued past the gym to a door at the far corner of the house. Watch your head. She ducked unnecessarily beneath the door jamb and followed Yao down a flight of narrow stone stairs. I smell wine, she said. Don't get your hopes up, said Yao. It's the ghost of old wine. He pushed back a heavy oak door with some effort and ushered her into a surprisingly large, cave-like room with an arched, wood-beamed ceiling, brick walls lined with a few chairs, and a series of soft blue rectangular mats laid out at intervals on the hardwood floor. This is where you will come for yoga classes and all your guided sitting meditations, said Yao. You'll be spending a lot of time down here. It was quiet and cool, and the ghostly smell of wine was overlaid by the scent of incense. The studio did have a lovely, peaceful feel to it, and Frances thought she would enjoy being here, even though she wasn't that keen on yoga or meditation. She had done a transcendental meditation course years ago, hoping for enlightenment, and every time, without fail, she'd nod off within 2 minutes of focusing on her breathing, waking up at the end to discover that everyone else had experienced flashes of light, memories of past lives, and rapture, or whatever, while she'd snoozed and drooled. Basically, she'd paid to have a 40-minute nap at the local high school once a week. No doubt she would be spending a lot of time napping down here, dreaming of wine. At one point, when the property operated a vineyard, this cellar could hold up to 20,000 bottles of wine. Yao gestured at the walls, although there were no longer any facilities for keeping wine. But when the house was originally built, it was used for storage or as somewhere to secure misbehaving convict workers, or even to hide from bushrangers. If these walls could talk, said Frances. Her eye was caught by a large flat-screen television hanging from one of the beams at the end of the room. What's that screen for? It seemed especially incongruous after Yao's talk of the house's early colonial history. I thought this was a screen-free environment. Tranquillum House is absolutely a screen-free environment, agreed Yao. He glanced at the television screen with a slight frown.
But we recently installed a security and intercom system so we can all communicate with each other from different parts of the resort when necessary. It's quite a large property, and the safety of our guests is paramount. He changed the subject abruptly. I'm sure you will be interested in this, Frances. He ushered her over to a corner of the room and pointed to a brick almost concealed by the joinery of one of the arched beams. Frances put on her reading glasses and read out loud the small, beautifully inscribed words, Adam and Roy Webster, Stonemasons, 1840. The Stonemason Brothers, said Yao. The assumption is that they did this secretly. Good for them, said Frances. They were proud of their work, as they should have been. They silently contemplated the inscription for a few moments before Yao clapped his hands together. Let's head back up. He led her up the stairs into the house and to another glass door featuring just one beautiful word, spa. Last but not least, the spa, where you will come for your massages and any other wellness treatments scheduled for you. Yao opened the door, and Frances sniffed like Pavlov's dog at the scent of essential oils. This was another drawing room that was remodeled, said Yao carefully. Ah, well, I'm sure you did a good job retaining the original features. Frances patted his arm as she peered inside the dimly lit room. She could hear the trickling sound of a water feature, and one of those ridiculous but divine relaxation soundtracks, the kind with crashing waves, harp music, and the occasional frog piped through the walls. All spa treatments are complimentary, part of the package. You won't receive a scary bill at the end of your stay, said Yao as he closed the door. I did read that on the website, but I wasn't sure if it could be true, said Frances disingenuously, because if it wasn't true, she would be making a complaint to the Department of Fair Trading QuickSmart. She made her eyes wide and grateful, as Yao seemed to take personal pride in the wonders of Tranquillum House. Well, it is true, Frances, said Yao lovingly, like a parent telling her that tomorrow really was Christmas Day. Now, we'll just pop in here and get your blood tests and so on out of the way. I'm sorry? What? Said Frances as she was shepherded into a room that looked like a doctor's office. She felt discombobulated. Weren't they just talking about spa treatments? Just sit right here, said Yao. We'll do your blood pressure first. Frances found herself seated as Yao wrapped a cuff around her arm and pumped it enthusiastically. It might be higher than usual, he said. People feel a little stressed and nervous when they arrive. They're tired after their journey. It's natural. But let me tell you, I've never had a guest finish their retreat without a significant drop in their blood pressure. Hmm, said Frances. She watched Yao write down her blood pressure. She didn't ask if it was high or low. It was often low. She had been checked out for hypotension before because of her tendency to faint. If she got dehydrated or tired or saw blood, her vision tunneled and the world tipped. Yao snapped on a pair of plastic green gloves. Francis looked away and focused on a point on the wall. He buckled a tourniquet around her arm and tapped her forearm.
"Great veins," he said.
Nurse has often said that about Francis's veins. She always felt momentarily proud and then kind of depressed, because what a waste of a positive attribute.
"I didn't actually realize there would be a blood test," said Francis.
"Daily blood tests," said Yao cheerfully. "Very important, because it means we can tweak your treatment plans accordingly."
I might actually opt out of the tiny ouch," said Yao.
Francis looked back to her arm and then quickly away again as she caught sight of a test tube filling with her blood. She hadn't even registered the prick of the needle. She felt all at once as powerless as a child and was reminded of the few times in her life she'd had to go into hospital for minor surgeries, and how much she disliked the lack of control over her body. Nurses and doctors had the right to prod at her as they pleased, with no love or desire or affection, just expertise. It always took a few days to fully re-inhabit her body again. Did this young man, currently helping himself to her blood, even have medical expertise? Had she really done her due diligence on this place?
"Are you trained as a..."
She was trying to say, "Do you know what the hell you're doing?"
"I used to be a paramedic in a previous life," replied Yao.
She met his eyes. Was he possibly a little mad? Did he mean he was a reincarnated paramedic?
You never knew with these alternative types.
"You don't mean literally a previous life?"
Yao laughed out loud, a very normal sounding laugh. "It was about 10 years ago now."
"Do you miss it?"
"Absolutely not. I'm passionate about the work we do here." His eyes blazed.
Maybe just slightly mad.
"Right. That's that," said Yao, removing the needle and handing her a cotton wool ball. "Press firmly."
He labeled her test tube and smiled at her.
"Excellent. Now, we'll just check your weight."
"Oh, is that really necessary? I'm not here for weight loss. I'm here for, you know, personal transformation."
"Just for our files," said Yao.
He removed the cotton wool ball, pressed a circular band-aid onto the tiny red pinprick, and indicated a set of scales.
"On your hop."
Frances averted her eyes from the number. She had no idea of her weight and no interest in learning it. She knew she could be thinner, and of course when she was younger she was indeed much thinner. But she was generally happy with her body as long as it wasn't giving her pain, and bored by all the different ways women droned on about the subject of weight, as if it were one of the great mysteries of life. The recent weight losers, evangelical about whatever method had worked for them, the thin women who called themselves fat, the average women who called themselves obese, the ones desperate for her to join in their lavish self-loathing. "Oh, Frances, isn't it just so depressing when you see young, thin girls like that?"
"Not especially," Frances would say, adding extra butter to her bread roll.
Yao wrote something on a form in a cream-coloured file marked in black Sharpie block letters with her name, Frances Welty. This was starting to feel too much like a visit to the doctor. Frances felt exposed and vulnerable and regretful. She wanted to go home. She wanted a muffin. "I'd really like to get to my room now," she said. "It was a long drive."
"Absolutely. I'm going to book you into the spa for an urgent massage for that back pain," said Yao. "Shall I give you half an hour to settle into your room, enjoy your welcome smoothie, and read your welcome pack?"
"That sounds like heaven," said Frances. They walked back past the dining room, where her darling drug dealers, Jessica and Ben, stood with their own white uniformed wellness consultant, a dark haired young woman who, according to her name badge, was called Delilah. Delilah was delivering the same spiel as Yao about the warning bells. Jessica's plastic face was filled with worry, so much so that she was almost, but not quite, pulling off a frown.
"But what if you don't hear the bell?"
"Then off with your head," said Frances. Everyone turned to look at her. Ben, whose cap was now the wrong way around again, raised a single eyebrow.
"Joke," said Frances weakly. Frances saw the two wellness consultants exchange looks she couldn't quite read. She wondered if they were sleeping together. They'd have such aerobic, flexible sex with all that wellness pumping through their young bodies. It would be just so awesome.
Yao led her back towards the Titanic stairs. As Frances hurried to keep pace, they passed a man and two women coming down the staircase together, all three in olive green robes featuring the Tranquillum House emblem. The man lagged behind to put on glasses so he could closely examine the wall on the landing. He was so tall, the dressing gown was more like a miniskirt, revealing knobbly knees and very white, very hairy legs. They were the sort of male legs that made you feel uncomfortable, as if you were looking at a private part of the body.
"Well, my point is that you just don't see craftsmanship like this anymore," he said as he peered at the wall. "That's what I just love about houses like this, the attention to detail. I mean, think of those tiles I was showing you earlier. What's extraordinary is that somebody took the time to individually..."
"Hello again, Yao. Another guest, is it? How are you?"
He took off his glasses, beamed at Frances, and thrust out his hand.
"Napoleon!" he cried.
It took her a terrifying second to realize he was introducing himself, not just yelling out a random historical figure's name.
"Frances," she said, in the nick of time. "Nice to meet you. Here for the 10-day retreat, I assume?"
He was on the stair above her, so his height was even more pronounced. It was like tipping her head back to look at a monument.
"I am."
Frances made a tremendous effort not to comment on his height, as she knew from her 6-foot friend Jen that tall people were well aware they were tall.
"I most certainly am."
Napoleon indicated the two women further down the stairs.
"Us too. These are my beautiful girls, my wife Heather and daughter Zoe."
The two women were also notably tall. They were a basketball team. They gave her the restrained, polite smiles of a celebrity's family members who are used to having to wait while he is accosted by fans. Except that in this case, it was Napoleon doing the accosting. The wife, Heather, bounced on the balls of her feet. She was wiry, with extremely wrinkled, tanned skin, as if she'd been scrunched up and then spread smooth.
Heather, skin like leather, thought Francis. That was a really mean mnemonic, but Heather would never know. Heather had grey hair pulled back in a tight ponytail and bloodshot eyes. She seemed very intense, which was fine. Francis had some intense friends. She knew how to cope with intensity. Never try to match it. The daughter, Zoe, had her dad's height and the casual grace of an athletic, outdoorsy girl. Showy Zoe? But she wasn't showy at all. Not showy Zoe. Zoe certainly didn't look like she was in need of a health resort. How much more rejuvenated could you get? Frances thought about the young couple, Ben and Jessica, who also seemed in sparkling good health. Were health resorts only attended by the already healthy? Was she going to be the least healthy-looking person here? She'd never been bottom of the class, except for that one time in Transcendental Meditation for Beginners. "We thought we'd explore the hot springs. Maybe have a quick soak," said Napoleon to Yao and Francis, as if they'd asked. "Then we'll do a few laps of the pool." Clearly they were one of those active families who threw their bags down on the floor and left their hotel room the moment they checked in. "I'm planning a quick nap before an urgent massage," said Francis. "Excellent idea," cried Napoleon. "A nap and a massage. Sounds perfect. Isn't this place amazing? And I hear the hot springs are incredible." He was an extremely enthusiastic man. "Make sure you rehydrate after the hot springs," Yao said to him. "There are water bottles at reception." "Will do, Yao, and then we'll be back in time for the noble silence."
"Noble silence," said Francis. "It will all become clear, Francis," said Yao.
"It's in your information pack, Francis," said Napoleon. "Bit of a surprise. I wasn't expecting the silence aspect. I've heard of silent retreats, of course, but must admit they didn't appeal. I'm a talker myself, as my girls here will tell you. But we'll roll with the punches, go with the flow."
As he talked on in the comforting way of the chronically loquacious, Francis watched his wife and daughter further down the stairs. The daughter, who wore black flip-flops, put one heel on the step above her and leaned forward as if she were discreetly stretching her hamstring. The mother watched her daughter, and Francis saw the ghost of a smile, followed almost immediately by an expression of pure despair that dragged all her features down, as if she were clawing at her cheeks. Then in the next instant it was gone, and she smiled benignly up at Francis, and Francis felt as though she had seen something she shouldn't have. Napoleon said,
"It wasn't you who arrived in that Lamborghini, was it, Francis? I saw it from our room. That's one hell of a car."
"Not me. I'm the Peugeot," said Francis.
"Nothing wrong with the Peugeot. Although I hear those jackals charge like wounded bulls when it comes to servicing, right?"
He mixed his metaphors most delightfully. Francis was keen to talk more with him. He was someone who would answer any question with candor and vigor. She loved those sorts of people.
"Dad," said his daughter, "not showy Zoe. Let the lady pass. She's only just got here. She probably wants to get to her room."
Sorry. I'll see you at dinner. Although we won't be chatting then, will we?"
He tapped the side of his nose and grinned, but there was a trapped, panicky look in his eyes.
"Lovely to meet you."
He clapped Yao on the shoulder.
See you later, Yao, mate.
Francis followed Yao up the stairs. At the top, he turned right and led her down a carpeted hallway lined with historical photos that she planned to study later.
This wing of the house was added in 1895, said Yao. You'll find all the rooms have original fireplaces with marble mantelpieces of Georgian design. Not that you'll be lighting any fires in this heat.
I didn't expect to see families doing this retreat, commented Francis. I must admit I thought there'd be more people like me.
Fatter people than me, Yao. Much fatter. We get people from all walks of life here at Tranquillum House, said Yao as he unlocked her room with a large, old-fashioned metal key.
Probably not all walks of life, mused Frances, because come on now, the place wasn't cheap. But she stopped talking as Yao held open the door for her.
Here we are.
It was an airy, plush-carpeted room filled with period furniture, including an enormous four-poster bed. Open French doors led to a balcony with a view that stretched to the horizon. A rolling patchwork quilt of vineyards and farmhouses and green and gold countryside. Flocks of birds wheeled across the sky. Her bag sat like an old familiar friend in a corner of the room. There was a fruit basket on the coffee table, along with a glass of green, sludge-like juice with a strawberry on the side. Everything except the juice looked extremely appealing.
That's your welcome smoothie there, said Yao. There are 6 organic smoothies a day, prepared specifically for your changing individual needs.
They're not wheatgrass, are they? I once had a wheatgrass shot and it scarred me for life.
Yao picked up the glass and handed it to her.
Trust me, it's tasty.
Francis looked at it doubtfully.
The smoothies are mandatory, said Yao kindly.
It was confusing because you'd think from his tone that he'd said, they are optional. She took a sip.
Oh, she said, surprised.
She could taste mango, coconut, and berries. It was like drinking a tropical holiday.
It's quite good. Very good.
Yes, Francis, said Yao.
He used her name as often as a desperate real estate agent.
And the good news is, it's not only delicious, but brimming with natural goodness. Please make sure you drink the entire glass.
I will, said Francis agreeably.
There was an awkward pause.
Oh, said Francis, you mean now?
She took another, larger sip.
Yum!
Yao smiled. The daily smoothies are crucial for your wellness journey.
Gosh, well, I want to keep my wellness journey on track.
Absolutely, you do, said Yao.
She met his eyes. There was no irony as far back as she could see. He was going to shame that snark right out of her.
I'm going to leave you to relax, said Yao. Your welcome pack is right here. Please take the time to read it because there are important instructions for the next 24 hours. The noble silence that Napoleon mentioned will be beginning shortly, and I know you're going to find that so beneficial.
Oh, now,
Speaking of silence, Francis, I'm sure you can guess what I need next from you.
He looked at her expectantly.
No idea. Not more blood, I hope.
It's time to hand over all your electronic devices, said Yao. Mobile phone, tablets, everything.
No problem.
Frances retrieved her phone from her handbag, switched it off, and handed it to Yao. A not unpleasant feeling of subservience crept over her. It was like being on an aeroplane once the seatbelt sign was turned on and the flight attendants were now in charge of your entire existence.
Great. Thanks. You're officially off the grid.
Yao held up her phone. We'll keep it safe. Some guests say the digital detox is one of the most enjoyable elements of their time with us. When it's time to leave, you'll be saying, "Don't give it back. I don't want it back."
He held up his hands to indicate someone waving him away.
Frances tried to imagine herself in 10 days and found it strangely difficult, as if it wasn't 10 days, but 10 years she was imagining. Would she really be transformed? Thinner, lighter, pain-free, able to leap from her bed at sunrise without caffeine?
Don't forget your massage at the spa, said Yao.
Oh. And that nasty paper cut. He walked to a sideboard, selected a tube from an array of Tranquillum house-branded cosmetics, and said, "Let's see that thumb."
Frances presented it to him, and he placed a dab of soothing, cool gel on her paper cut, with tender care.
"Your wellness journey has begun, Frances," he said, still holding her hand, and instead of smirking, Frances found herself close to tears.
"I've actually been feeling very unwell lately, Yao," she said pitifully.
"I know you have."
Yao put both his hands on her shoulders, and it didn't feel silly or sexual. It felt healing.
"We're going to get you well, Frances. We're going to get you feeling as well as you've ever felt in your life."
He closed the door gently behind him as he left. Frances turned in a slow circle and waited for that inevitable moment of solitary traveler gloom. But instead, her spirits lifted. She wasn't alone. She had Yao to take care of her. She was on a wellness journey. She walked out onto her balcony to admire the view and gasped. A man on the balcony next to hers was leaning so far over it, he looked in danger of falling.
"Careful," she warned, but only under her breath, so as not to startle him.
The man turned in her direction, lifted his hand and smiled. It was Ben. She recognized the baseball cap. She waved back. If they raised their voices, they could probably hear each other perfectly well, but it was better to pretend they were too far away to chat. Otherwise, they'd feel obligated to talk every time they happened to see each other on their balconies. And there was going to be enough obligatory chatting at every meal. She looked in the other direction and saw a row of identical balconies stretching to the end of the house. All the guest rooms shared this same view. The other balconies were empty, although as Frances watched, the figure of a woman emerged from the room at the furthest end of the house. She was too far away to distinguish her features, but Frances, keen to be friendly, gave her a wave. The woman instantly spun around
and went back inside her room. Oh, well, perhaps she hadn't seen Frances. Or perhaps she suffered from tremendous social anxiety. Frances could handle the dreadfully shy. You just needed to approach slowly, as if they were little woodland creatures. Frances turned back to Ben and saw that he'd also gone back inside. She wondered if he and Jessica were still arguing. Their rooms were adjoining, so if things got heated, Frances might overhear. Once, on a book tour, she'd stayed in a thin-walled hotel where she had the pleasure of overhearing a couple argue passionately and descriptively about their sex life. That had been great. "I don't get the obsession with strangers," her first husband, Sol, once said to her, and Frances had struggled to explain that strangers were by definition interesting. It was their strangeness, the not knowing. Once you knew everything there was to know about someone, you were generally ready to divorce them. She went back inside her room to unpack. It might be nice to have a cup of tea and a few squares of chocolate while she read her information pack. She was sure it was going to have rules she would prefer not to follow. The noble silence that was beginning shortly sounded foreboding, and she would need sugar to cope. Also, she hadn't exactly followed the suggestion about reducing her sugar and caffeine intake in the days leading up to the retreat, so as to avoid withdrawal symptoms. Frances couldn't be dealing with a headache right now. She went to pull out her contraband from where she'd carefully hidden it, right at the bottom of her bag, underneath her underwear, wrapped in her nightie. She'd laughed at herself for hiding it. It wasn't like they were going to be checking her bag. This wasn't rehab or boarding school. "You've got to be kidding," she said out loud. It wasn't there. She emptied all her clothes onto her bed with a growing sense of fury. They wouldn't, would they? It was unconscionable. Illegal, surely. It was very bad manners. She turned the bag upside down and shook it. The nightie was still there, neatly folded by invisible hands, but the coffee, tea, chocolate, and wine were most definitely gone. Who had been through her bag? It couldn't be Yao. He'd been with her the whole time from when she arrived. Someone else had rifled through her underwear and confiscated her treats. What could she do? She couldn't ring reception and say, "Somebody took my chocolate and wine." Well, she could, but she didn't have the requisite chutzpah. The website made it clear that snacks and coffee and alcohol were all banned. She'd broken the rules, and she'd been caught. She would say nothing, and they would say nothing, and on the last day they would hand it all back to her with a knowing smirk as she checked out. Like returning a prisoner's personal effects. This was deeply embarrassing. She sat on the end of her bed and looked dolefully at the lovely fruit bowl. She laughed a little, trying to turn it into a funny story her friends would enjoy, and selected a mandarin from the bowl. As she plunged her thumb into its fleshy center, she heard something. A voice? It didn't come from Ben and Jessica's room. It was the other room adjoining hers. There was a thud, followed immediately by the unmistakable sound of something breaking. A male voice swore, loudly and forcefully, "Fuck it!" Indeed, thought Frances, as the malevolent beginnings of a headache crept slowly across her forehead. Chapter 7. Jessica sat on the four-poster bed and tested the mattress with the palm of her hand, while Ben stood on the balcony, one hand shielding his eyes. He wasn't enjoying the beautiful view.
"I'm sure they haven't stolen it," she said.
She meant to sound funny and light-hearted, but she couldn't seem to get the tone of her voice to come out right these days. A hardness kept creeping in.
"Yeah, but where have they parked it?" said Ben. "That's what I don't get. I'd just like to know where it is. Have they got an underground bunker somewhere?"
Did you notice that when I asked if it was parked undercover, she sort of avoided answering the question?
Said Jessica, noncommittally. She couldn't bear another fight about the car, or about anything. Her stomach was still recovering from the last screaming match. Whenever they fought, she got instant indigestion, and that meant that these days she nearly always had indigestion. Their arguments were like submerged rocks they kept crashing up against. They couldn't be avoided. Wham, wham, wham. She lay back on the bed and looked at the light fitting. Was that a spider web near the globe? This house was so old and dark and depressing. She'd been aware it was going to be a historic house, but she thought they might have, you know, renovated. There were cracks all over the walls and a kind of damp smell. She turned on her side and looked at Ben. Now he was leaning dangerously over the balcony railing, trying to see the other side of the house. He cared about that car more than he cared about her. Once, she saw him running his hand along the bonnet, and for just a moment, she'd felt envious of the car, of the way Ben was touching it so gently and sensuously, the same way he used to touch her. She was going to tell their counselor that. She'd written it down, so she wouldn't forget. She felt like it was a really profound, powerful thing to mention, quite significant and telling. It made her eyes prickle with tears when she thought of it. If the counselor ever wrote a book about her experience as a marriage counselor, she would probably mention it. "I once had a patient who treated his car more tenderly than he treated his wife." No need to mention the car was a Lamborghini. If they did, all the male readers would say, "Oh, well then." She wished the intensive couples counselling part of this retreat would hurry up and start, but Delilah, their wellness consultant, had been annoyingly vague about when it would begin. She wondered if the counsellor would ask them about their sex life, and if she, Jessica assumed she would be a she, would be able to hide her surprise when she heard they were down to having sex, like once a week, which meant their marriage was officially in dire trouble. Jessica didn't know if she could talk about sex in front of the counselor anyway. The counselor might automatically assume that she was sexually unskilled or that there was something wrong with her in a very personal gynecological kind of way. Jessica was beginning to wonder that herself. She was obviously prepared to get more surgery, even down there, or do a course, read a book, improve her skills. She'd always been prepared to improve, to listen to the advice of experts. She read a lot of self-help books. She Googled. Ben had never read a self-help book in his life. Ben came back inside from the balcony, lifting up his t-shirt to scratch his stomach. He didn't bother with crunches or planks, and his stomach still looked that good. "That author we met is in the room next to us," he said.
He picked up an apple from the fruit bowl and tossed it from hand to hand like a baseball.
Frances, why do you reckon she's here?
I expect she wants to lose weight, said Jessica.
Like, duh.
She thought it was kind of obvious. Frances had that padded look middle-aged women got. Jessica herself would never allow that to happen. She'd rather be dead.
You reckon? Said Ben. What does it matter at her age?
He didn't wait for an answer.
What are her books like?
I used to love them, said Jessica. I read them all. There was one called Nathaniel's Kiss. I read it in high school, and it was just really romantic, I guess.
Romantic was too ineffectual a word to describe the feelings Nathaniel's kiss had provoked in her. She remembered how she'd cried big, heaving, shuddering sobs, and then she'd kept rereading that last chapter for the pleasure of more crying. In some ways, it felt like Nathaniel was the first man she ever loved. She couldn't tell Ben that. He never read fiction. He wouldn't understand. But was that one of the problems in their marriage? That she didn't even bother to try to communicate how she felt about things that were important to her? Or did it not matter? She didn't need to hear him talk about his passion for his car. He could talk about his car with his mates. She could talk about her memories of Nathaniel's kiss with her girlfriends. Ben took a giant bite of the apple. Jessica couldn't do that anymore, not with her new capped teeth. The dentist wanted her to wear some sort of a mouth guard at night to keep her expensive crowns all safe. It was annoying that the better the stuff you got, the less relaxed you could be about it. It was like the new rug in their hallway. Neither of them could bear to walk on something so astoundingly expensive. They shuffled down the sides and winced when their guests marched straight down the middle in dirty sneakers.
That smoothie was pretty good, said Ben, his mouth full of apple. But I'm starved. I don't know if my body can cope without pizza for 10 days. I don't see why we even have to do that part. What's that got to do with marriage counseling?
I told you, said Jessica. It's like a holistic approach. We have to work on everything, our minds, bodies, and spirits.
Sounds like a load of...
He cut himself off and walked over to the row of light switches by the wall and started playing with the one that made the ceiling fan work. He put the fan onto cyclonic speed. Jessica put a pillow over her face and tried to go for as long as she could without saying, "Turn it off!" Once, she wouldn't have thought about this. She would have just yelled, "Oh my God, turn it off, you idiot!" And he would have laughed and kept it on, and she would have tried to turn it off, and he wouldn't have let her, and they would have pretend wrestled.
Did they laugh more before?
Back when she was working in admin and he was a panel beater working for Pete. Back when Ben drove a V8 Commodore that didn't make anyone look twice and she had B-cup boobs that didn't make anyone look twice either. Back when they thought going to a movie and the local Thai restaurant on the same night was splurging. And when the arrival of the credit card statement each month was, like, really stressful and even once made her cry? She didn't want to believe it was better before. If it was, then her mother was right, and she couldn't stand it if her mother was right.
Ben turned the fan down to a gentler breeze. Jessica removed the pillow from her face, closed her eyes, and felt her heart race with fear of something unnamed and unknown. It made her think of the vertiginous fear she'd felt the day of the robbery. It was 2 years ago now that she'd come home from work to discover their ground floor apartment had been robbed, their possessions strewn everywhere with aggressive, malicious abandon, every drawer open, a black footprint across her white T-shirt, the glint of broken glass. Ben arrived home just moments later.
What the hell?
She didn't know if he immediately thought of his sister, but she did. Ben's sister Lucy had mental health issues. That was the euphemism Ben's lovely, long-suffering mother used. The truth was that Ben's sister was an addict. Lucy's life was an endless roller coaster, and they all had to take the same ride over and over without getting off. Lucy was missing. No one had heard from her. Lucy had turned up in the middle of the night and trashed the house. Ben's mum had to call the police. They were planning an intervention, but they were going to handle this intervention differently from the last intervention. This time it would work. Lucy was doing well. Lucy was talking about rehab. Lucy was in rehab. Lucy was out of rehab. Lucy had been in another car accident. Lucy was pregnant again. Lucy was fucked up and there would never be an end to it. And because Jessica had never known the Lucy of before, the Lucy who was supposedly funny and smart and kind, it was hard not to hate her. Lucy was the reason for the underlying tension at every event with Ben's family. Would she turn up demanding money or screaming insults or crying crocodile tears because she just wanted to be a mum to the two children she was incapable of bringing up? Everyone knew Lucy stole. If you went to a barbecue at Ben's place, you hid your cash. So it was perfectly natural that Jessica's first thought when she walked into the apartment that day was Lucy. She tried so hard not to say it, but she couldn't help it. Just that one word. She wished she could take it back. She hadn't made it sound enough like a question. She'd made it sound like a statement. She wished she'd at least said, "Lucy?" She remembered how Ben shook his head. His face was drawn tight with shame. She had thought, "How do you know it wasn't her?" But it turned out he was right. The robbery had nothing to do with Lucy. She was on the other side of the country at the time. So it was just an ordinary, happens-to-lots-of-people house robbery. They hadn't lost much because they didn't have much to lose. An old iPad with a cracked screen, a necklace that Ben had given Jessica for her 21st. It had a tiny diamond pendant, and it had cost Ben something like 2 months' salary. She'd loved that necklace and still mourned it, even though it had just been a crappy little necklace with a smidge of a diamond, like a quarter carat. The thieves had rejected the rest of Jessica's jewelry box, which she found humiliating. Jessica and Ben had both hated the feeling of knowing that someone had walked through their home sneering, as if browsing through an unsatisfactory shop. The insurance company paid out without much fuss, but Ben and Jessica had to pay a $500 excess, which they resented because they hadn't asked to be robbed. It was just an ordinary robbery, except that it ended up changing their lives forever.
Why are you staring at me like that? Asked Ben.
He stood at the end of the bed, looking down at her. Jessica's gaze came back into focus.
Like what?
Like you're planning to cut off my balls with a cheese knife?
What? I wasn't even looking at you. I was thinking.
He kept chewing the remains of his apple and raised an eyebrow. The very first time they ever made eye contact in Mr. Munro's maths class, he did that. A cool, laconic lift of his left eyebrow. It was literally the hottest thing she'd seen in her entire life. And maybe if he'd raised two eyebrows instead of one, she wouldn't have fallen in love with him.
I don't even have a cheese knife, said Jessica.
He smiled as he threw the apple core into the bin from across the room and picked up their welcome pack.
We'd better read this, hey?
He ripped open the envelope and papers went flying. Jessica managed to stop herself from grabbing at it and putting it all back in order. She was the one in charge of paperwork. If it were up to Ben, they would never file a tax return. He opened what looked like a covering letter.
Okay, so this is a guide map for our wellness journey.
Ben, said Jessica, this isn't going to work if we don't...
I know. I'm taking it seriously. I drove down that road, didn't I? Didn't that show my commitment?
Oh, please, don't start on the car again. She felt like crying.
I only meant... His mouth twisted. Forget it.
He scanned the letter and read out loud. Welcome to your wellness journey, yada yada. The retreat will begin with a period of silence lasting 5 days, during which there will be no talking apart from counselling sessions. No touching, no reading, no writing, no eye contact with other guests or your own companions.
What the?
This wasn't mentioned on the website, said Jessica. Ben continued to read out loud. You may be familiar with the term monkey brain. He looked up at Jessica. She shrugged, so he kept reading. Monkey brain refers to the way your mind swings from thought to thought, like a monkey swinging from branch to branch. Ben made a sound like a monkey and scratched under his arm to demonstrate.
Thanks for that.
Jessica felt the tug of a smile. Sometimes they were fine. Ben read on. It takes at least 24 hours to silence monkey brain. A period of nourishing silence and reflection settles the mind, body and soul. Our aim will be to discover a beautiful state that Buddhism calls noble silence.
So, we're just going to spend the next 5 days avoiding eye contact and not talking, said Jessica. Even when we're alone in our room?
It's not like we don't have any experience with that, said Ben.
Very funny, said Jessica. Give me that.
She took the letter and read. During the silence, we request that you walk slowly and mindfully with intention, heel to toe, about the property, while avoiding eye contact and conversation. If you must communicate with a staff member, please come to reception and follow the instructions on the laminated blue card. There will be guided meditation sessions, both walking and sitting, throughout each day. Please listen for the bells. She put the letter down. This is gonna be so freaky. We'll have to eat with strangers in total silence.
Better than boring small talk, I guess, said Ben.
He looked at her. Do you want to do it properly?
We could talk here in our room and nobody would ever know.
Jessica thought about it. I think we should do it properly, she said. Don't you? Even if it sounds stupid, we should just follow the rules and do whatever they say.
Fine with me, said Ben, as long as they don't tell me to jump off a cliff.
He scratched his neck.
I don't get what we're going to do here.
I told you, said Jessica, meditate, yoga, exercise classes.
Yeah, said Ben, but in between all that, if we can't talk or watch TV, what will we do?
It will be hard without screens, said Jessica. She thought she was going to miss social media more than coffee. She looked again at the letter. The silence begins when the bell rings 3 times. She looked at the clock in the room. We've got 30 minutes left where we're allowed to talk.
Or touch, she thought.
They looked at each other.
Neither spoke. So the silence shouldn't be too hard for us then, said Ben.
Jessica laughed, but Ben didn't smile. Why weren't they having sex right now? Wasn't that what they once would have done, without even talking about it? She should say something, do something. He was her husband. She could touch him. But a tiny fear had trickled into her head late last year, and now she couldn't get rid of it. It was something about the way he looked at her, or didn't look at her, a clenching of his jaw. The thought was this. He doesn't love me anymore. It seemed so ironic that he could fall out of love with her now when she had never looked so good. Over the last year, she had invested a lot of time and money and a fair amount of pain in her body. She had done everything there was to do. Her teeth, her hair, her skin, her lips, her boobs. Everyone said the results were amazing. Her Instagram account was filled with comments like, "You look so hot, Jessica," and "You look better and better every time I see you." The only person without anything positive to say was her own husband. And if he didn't find her attractive now, when she was her very best self, then he must never have found her attractive. He must have been faking it all along. Why did he even marry her? Touch me, she thought. And in her head, it was an anguished wail. Please, please touch me. But all he did was stand up and walk back over to the fruit bowl.
The mandarins look good,